we all are. Shadow Meld comes up with some of the best ideas in the entire Dice Masters universe. So
Hey, we're not allowed to talk about that idea yet.
I'm talking about this idea. What are you talking about?
Sorry,
the Vassal idea. Yes.
Spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers, man. Spoilers. Stop giving stuff away. Welcome to the prep area for another week. I'm RJ Retro alongside Shadow Meld. What a week it has been.
Yeah, it's been a crazy, crazy Worlds week, let me tell you.
Exactly. Lots to talk about on this show. We're going to get into an economy team that's based completely around Dean Leyland's World Championship team. We're also going to discuss a very evil team that Shadow Meld created with Evan from the Reserve Pool podcast. We're going to start with Little Cup. It's the new meta where you're only using common characters. You've put together a team here, Shadow Meld, that I actually think could be competitive in other metas as well, but in this meta specifically where you can only use common cards and dice, that's looking pretty good.
Yeah, I seriously like it. It's basically a spin-off of Flying Sidekicks, but I think it's a pretty awesome looking team.
One thing I've noticed here is that you do have Professor X recruiting Young Mutants, one die, of course, for the PXG Global, and another one here where it's just one die is your Mr. Fantastic Brilliant Scientist. He gets +2/+2 while attacking and while blocking, but it's pretty much for the Global. Pay mask, target character must attack this term. What's the logic behind having that on this team?
One of the problems with sidekicks as a way to win a game is it's hard to kill your opponent's wall with your wall, because your wall is made up of a lot of little tiny guys that if your opponent just lets a couple through at a time, he can whittle your wall away using his life as a resource. So by forcing his guys to attack into you, you can use all of your sidekicks together to block his big guys. The other downside is when you kill one of your opponent's guys, he has a 50% chance of coming back. When your opponent kills one of your sidekicks, he only has like a 16.666% chance of coming back.
All right, so let's focus on those sidekicks now. First off, Angel Air Transport, 3 dice. This is the when fielded, you may field a sidekick die from your used pile and spin it to its character side. The 3-cost shield, the X-Men, or the X-Men character, for lack of a better term. Angel has to be on this team.
Yeah, he's basically the foundation of getting sidekicks on the board. He is the most reliable way to get a sidekick on the board. You buy him for 3, you field him for 1-ish, and he puts a sidekick on the board, which basically means you're fielding him for free and paying 1 to get a free sidekick too. It's nice. He triggers when fielded effects twice because he fields himself and then fields a sidekick, or not necessarily his when fielded effect, but like there are some cards that say when you field a character, do X, and he can trigger those twice, which is pretty cool. But yeah, he combos really well for the rest of the team. Since the team is designed around making sidekicks and putting them on the board, he's the sidekick maker.
And the sidekick booster on this team is Green Goblin. Normally you see Gobby in this role, but since we're playing Little Cup, where you only use common cards, common dice, the 3 Green Goblins we're going to have in this game are the Goblin Lord variety. So 3-cost Bolt, a villain, and when Green Goblin is active, your sidekick characters get +1 attack, +1 defense, no matter how many Green Goblin dice you have fielded.
There are 3-4 characters in the entire game that make your sidekicks +1/+1. This is the cheapest, and he's a common, so we're going to use him. Not only that, he gives us a much needed thing to do with bolts, because this team doesn't have any other bolt characters on it and no bolt globals. So if we get a unlucky 3-bolts-1-sidekick turn, after we reroll, we can still buy Gobby or Green Goblin.
Yeah, although technically Gobby, not the Gobby that everyone loves in Dice Masters. Yeah, so moving on, now we're going to go into the Justice League portion of this team. Aquaman, Arthur Curry, 3 dice, 3-cost shield, obviously Justice League. And while Aquaman is active, Justice League characters cost 1 less to buy to a minimum of 1.
So there's some other Justice League characters that we wanted to buy, and we're just looking for a way to ramp those guys up just a little faster, and to also give us another Justice League body as a backup condition. We were thinking about playing just two Justice League characters on this team, but if your opponent eliminates one, then our strategy gets broken a little. So having a third one as a backup means your opponent needs to eliminate two characters in order to trigger, or in order to destabilize your team. So having three just doesn't hurt us, and this guy makes the other two easier to get.
Yeah, exactly, and we don't have a two cost on this team. However, if we have Aquaman Arthur Curry out, then we could buy Zatanna Zatara spelled backwards. We could bring her out for two masks. Now, normally she has a three cost mask. We have three dice of hers on our team. She is Justice League, of course. When fielded, draw a die from your bag and add it to your prep area.
And at two cost, her die is actually good stats. At three cost, her die is a little bad stat wise. But the ability to prep a die, there's two ways to kind of replicate the resurrection global, and we didn't want to use resurrection on this team, and we didn't want to use Silver Surfer because he does damage to us. So Zatanna allows us to replicate that resurrection effect while still getting a body out on the board. It's not as reliable every turn, do it exactly when you need it, but I think it's enough that when we buy something and we have an empty bag, we can put that thing we just bought in our bag, which is great and wonderful. Oh, by the way, she's Justice League, and why is that important?
Well, let's say that we want to bring out another Justice League character, like a Wonder Woman Princess Diana, the common. We have three dice on our team from her four-cost shield Justice League. If you have two or more Justice League characters in play, your sidekicks take no damage from attacking or blocking characters.
Yeah, so say we have four sidekicks on the board, and we have a Green Goblin on the board, and a Wonder Woman, and a Zatanna. Not too hard to believe that'll happen. That means we have four 2/2s who can't be killed during the combat step, which means we can pay a mask with Mr. Fantastic and force level 3 Hulk to come attack us, and then we just block the level 3 Hulk with all four sidekicks, and our sidekicks say, we don't die, but you do.
Yeah, and they would have to really make an effort to destroy those sidekicks to get through this team, because this will stop an Overcrush team. If you do not get KO'd, if your sidekicks don't get KO'd, the Overcrush damage does not come back and damage you, and that's something that really messes with somebody's game plan if you have sidekicks that cannot be destroyed. So that's the three Justice League characters on the team. We've got Professor X, Angel, Green Goblin. That means there are, and Mr. Fantastic. So there's one character left. This is the Dungeons and Dragons character, Human Paladin, Lesser Emerald Enclave. It's three dice on this team, four cost shield. It is a, I don't actually know what that symbol means.
Emerald Enclave is what that symbol represents.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. He has experience. Once per turn, gain a +1/+1 token when you knock out a monster. While active, your characters in the field cannot be affected by global abilities used by your opponent. I'm guessing that's probably why it's on this team. Plus, the global of pay a shield, reduce the damage you take from a character's ability to 1.
Yeah, so there are a couple ways to get around an invincible wall of sidekicks. The first is to kill them when they're not invincible, which is during your main step. The Paladin prevents globals like Magic Missile from targeting, and thus prevents your sidekicks from just being picked off. And then the other way to get around a giant wall is to do direct damage to your opponent. And the shield global on the Paladin helps at least mitigate that, if not negate it completely.
So a pretty strong team here. We've added two basic action cards that are going to make the team even better. No surprise from the Yu-Gi-Oh! Set. The only representative from the Yu-Gi-Oh! Set here, Mystic Box, the basic action. Choose an opposing monster. Your opponent draws a die. If it is a monster, replace the chosen monster with that die at its lowest level. Otherwise, return the die to the bag. Plus, of course, Patrick's favorite global in the world. Pay a shield. Swap the attack value of one of your monsters with that of one opposing monster.
So we're going to have reliably fielded sidekicks. I've talked about this before in, I think, episode 1. And we can now swap our sidekick's attack with whatever monsters you have on the board. And if your attack is equal to your defense, you're just going to basically be killing yourself. The big thing there is if you have the paladin out, they can't swap back. They can't target your character to swap the stats back. So it's a one-sided, super-duper global.
And another thing I really like about this team is the fact that the highest cost is Professor X, who's not coming out on the field. Everybody else is a 4 at most. Wonder Woman becomes a 3 with Aquaman, so there is actually a good chance that you're going to get most of the characters out if you want them to, because you only have 6 characters you're really looking to field at any one time. Aquaman, Human Paladin, Zatanna, Wonder Woman, Angel, and Green Goblin. The final basic action card, Blessing. Each of your characters gets +1 attack and +1 defense. On its second burst, 2 of your characters get an additional +1 and +1.
Yeah, so what you do is, if you get the double burst, you put the bonus on your Wonder Woman and your Aquaman or your Zatanna so that your Justice League characters don't disappear, and then all your sidekicks get an additional +1, +1. It's, you know, it's an army-wide increase in strength that you lay out right before you go in for the kill.
In other words, a perfect basic action card for a super sidekicks team, which is pretty much what we're running. Not really a flying sidekicks, but a super sidekicks. I think that's fair.
Yeah, there's not any flying or unblockability in here, so it works out pretty well.
I think so. So now what we'll do before we end this part of the show is we'll talk about those initial turns. Now, my guess is that the first purchase you really want to make here is Angel Air Transport.
Yeah, if you roll a shield. If for some reason you don't, you could always go Gobby, like I said, bolts. Or you could start your ramp going by buying Zatanna first. Or, heaven forbid, you do buy a shield and you don't want to buy Angel because your opponent sees that you're going sidekicks and buys something like a Manticore first. Manticore says, like, do 1 damage to every creature as it's fielded. So as you start fielding your sidekicks, your opponents are going to just KO them immediately. You can get Aquaman so that you can get Wonder Woman and Zatanna out and then also pick up Green Goblin. And then you have a lot more protection for your characters or for your sidekicks. And then you can pick up Angel and start reliably getting them out on the board. But there's a lot of ways you can pilot and flex with this. Angel's probably your general first pick.
Now, we're just going to put this out there as well. Whenever we say Gobby in reference to the Little Cup, we're referring to Green Goblin, just the common, not actual super rare Gobby. We're not trying to cheat the system. And also, another thing to remember, too, when you're building your teams, is that there are going to be characters that you're going to think, oh, wow, that's going to really do damage to me. It's going to cause some major issues. The Manticore, for example, the only one that they could play against us would be Manticore Lesser Beast when assigned to attack, deal 1 damage to your opponent. So it actually cuts maybe a third, or a little bit more than a third, actually, of the cards away that they can actually use against you. But sometimes when you're building a team, even people like Shadow Meld, who build seemingly dozens of teams every single day, sometimes when you're constricted to a specific meta, you forget that you don't have to deal with every single card out there. So this is a really fun team, I think, that could do some damage in Little Cup, and I look forward to actually seeing it in action. I think we'll try to do a Little Cup team every show if we can. And as well, another thing to talk about here, Shadow Meld, you had mentioned that you want to start using Vassal as sort of a chat.
Just a place to go and hang out, and you don't even have to be there when you're looking for a game. Just log into Vassal when you're not, you know, recording a podcast, or you know, when you're just hanging out for the evening on your computer, reading the internet. Log in there so you have an instantaneous way of finding out if any of the other TRP people are available to play a game. And even if you don't like Vassal as a way to play the game, it's a good lobby to get organized, and then you can go do a regular hangout game if you wanted to. But it's really hard. I mean, we do a great job on the TRP of giving you ways to contact people, but none of it's instantaneous. And if you log into the lobby, it's a great place where you can just talk. And you'll probably see me and RJ in there a lot. and Simij, who works as a developer for the Vassal system. And I think Necromanticer is in there a lot of times too. So,
and that's only the beginning. That's only the beginning. We're going to get more people in the Vassal chat. I know some of the other TRPers, some of the other people that do podcasts as part of the Reserve Pool Network are a fan of this idea, as we all are. Shadowmeld comes up with some of the best ideas in the entire Dice Masters universe. So,
Hey, we're not allowed to talk about that idea yet.
I'm talking about this idea. What are you talking about?
Sorry,
Vassal spoilers. Idea. Yes.
Spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers, man. Spoilers. Stop giving stuff away. But, yeah, look for us on Vassal. Look for us in the main lobby. We're going to be there a little bit more often. As of today, I think tonight there's a possibility we'll be on. If you're listening to this in the early morning, we should be on late evening. And maybe you can get your first Little Cup game in, because certainly that would be a lot of fun. So this is your Super Sidekicks team. This was Shadowmeld's idea, again, one of his many great ideas that he has. We're going to be joined by Evan to discuss a team that you created because you wanted to be a jerk. And I'm not even kidding. That's why you did it.
Yeah. Well, there have been a couple names for this team, but none of them are approved for the FCC. So we're calling it...
Apologies in advance. AIA... because you will be apologizing in advance when you play it. The reason we're going to bring Evan on to talk about it is Evan actually brought this team to his local store and felt awful the whole time he played it, which I guess if you're an evil person and you're a maniacal person and you're a nefarious geneticist person, you're gonna have fun.
I would like to point out, Evan went home with the OP cards.
He won. Yeah, he won. This is a winning team. This isn't just a... I'm going to ruin your day kind of team. This is a, I'm going to beat you. I'm going to beat you bad. And we're both going to feel terrible at the end of the day. Now we'll bring Evan into the conversation because he is the evil person that took this team to his local store and dominated. Welcome to the show.
Hi, everyone. It's good to be on yet another podcast.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you're doing everything.
All the podcasts.
Yep.
Yeah. Evan is the podcast superstar. So, but you were also the superstar at your store, in which you took home all the prizes running this team that Shadowmeld sort of created in one of his evil moments, I guess. What did you find when you used this team?
That I kind of didn't really like using it. It's not so much that it's not effective, and when I say it's not effective. I'm not sure how it would run necessarily against the top tier stuff, as I actually played mostly against sort of mid tier teams. I played against a Justice League team, a Flying Sidekicks team, and a Unblockables team, which none of them are quite, you know, on the top of the heap nowadays.
But well, here's a question. How many of them had PXG?
Trying to remember. I think at least one of them brought PXG with them, but I think one of them was actually counting on the other person too.
Oh, that's
and
good.
One of them was entirely DC, so it didn't have PXG, and I think the other one just—I don't remember if they brought it or not, but they may have been also expecting the other person to bring it.
So, what part of this team made it so frustrating for other people to play against, and at the same time frustrating for you to use?
Well, it's really the beholder imprisoning mechanics, where you just, you know, you put your guy out, grab a couple of their dice, you retreat him, and then you're done. And you do that again every time he puts out a die, and over and over again. And you sort of don't, your health's, no one's health moves ever particularly. And then you just sort of wait until you've got your 12 dice or whatever and can just punch him down. It makes for a sort of tedious game, and it wasn't so much like, oh, I'm not having fun, quote unquote. It's you see your opponent slowly realize that there's nothing they can do to get through, like to put up a resistance, and they're just waiting for death. And it feels kind of bad to know you're putting someone into that mindset. My last opponent when I played definitely had seen the games going on with other people, and he just wasn't, like, fielding dice. He had dice that he should have fielded and just wouldn't because he didn't want them getting taken. And I actually think that's sort of one of the strong, quote-unquote, strong points of the deck, in that there's a psychological edge to my opponent is going to steal all my dice. And I think that affects people.
I know when I play this deck, I want to one day steal all of my opponent's sidekicks so that all he has left to buy is characters that he knows I'm going to take and action dice. And if he doesn't buy enough action dice soon enough, he's going to run out of dice period to roll and die from just a deck, like just from drawing dice and hurting himself, or not drawing dice and hurting himself.
It's certainly possible, and I think our original draft had the White Queen OP reward to further that, but I just found why it's a cool idea, I just found it a little too hard to get her stuff to happen so that you can force the sidekicks into play and then steal them. So I wound up cutting her.
We're joined by Evan from the Reserve Pool Podcast, the flagship show that airs every Thursday night. And we're talking to him about the Apologies in Advance team, which it's based around the Beholder die that allows you to use all the basic actions at the same time. And this question, sort of sponsored by Staples, did playing this deck sort of give you an easy button where you just knew right away you were going to win every time you played?
I think had I been playing against higher tier decks, I would have been less certain. But certainly against the Flying Sidekick deck, I went in and I was just like, well, I completely destroy your main offensive ability. This is not going to go well for you. Like I went in, I saw the other person had Flying Sidekicks, and I'm just like, this isn't going to go well for you, man. I'm really sorry.
Again, apologies in advance, because you're not going to like this.
Yeah, I mean, oddly enough, a deck that maybe like a deck featuring a lot of big, like, total fielding cost 6 guys is actually kind of one of the things you're a little less sure about. And that was actually what happened with my Justice League team opponent, because he was fielding like Batman and other guys, and he was getting them on their 3 faces. I'm like, so I have to get out my Black Widow, or he can actually do something with these dice. We can't have that. So, you know, but that's when you start using Widow. And
she totally rounds out the team.
Yeah, that was really when it clicked what Widow was for. And very quickly it clicked why you absolutely need Blue Eyes White Dragon. Because you can't risk attacking with your Black Widows to get them knocked out. And your opponent's not going to have anything to attack with. So, if you're doing it right. So it becomes really hard to cycle them. So it's like, oh, well, I got my 3 guys knocked down to level 1, and now my opponent can field all the 3 cost guys they want, and I can't do anything about them.
Oh, yeah. You can field 2 Black Widows, then immediately Blue Eyes them and buy a second Beholder, just in case.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. I didn't have Blue Eyes White Dragon when I was playing this deck. I don't actually own a copy of the card. So I was just like, well, I have my Black Widows out. Now I can't roll my opponent's characters down because I'm not going to have a way of refueling them unless I hurt my opponent and have to deal with his dice again. So
Evan, finally, you were victorious. You dominated every team that you played. Would you recommend playing this deck if you're going to a game store and just playing in a casual tournament?
No. I mean, if you really desperately want to win, sure. But this is like hardcore Magic blue control at its very worst, where it's just your opponent never gets to do anything unless they're playing something super competitive. You're just going to sit there and ruin everyone's day, and not in a fun way. It's not going to be, oh, they got some good hits and there was some back and forth. No, you're going to sit there and you're going to take all their dice, and they're not going to do anything the entire game, and then you're going to kill them. And it's just like, yeah, you won, but at what cost? At what cost?
Well, thanks for coming on the show today and talking about your experiences with Apologies in Advance, because I don't have the heart to play it, so I appreciate the fact that you gave it a go. And now we can all avoid it for the rest of our lives.
Thank you. Thank you for playing it.
I wanted to try it out, and I regret having done so.
Well, that's Evan. You can find him on the forum at thereservepool.com under the name TRP Evan. And of course, every Thursday, he is the co-host of the Reserve Pool podcast, the flagship show. Every Thursday, make sure you catch it. It's now time to talk about the World Championship of Dice Masters for 2015. The winner was Dean Leyland. And what we decided to do is we were going to make an economy team based on that World Championship team. So really quickly, here's what Dean had. He had Deadpool, Blue Eyes White Dragon, Hulk the Green Goliath, the rare Solomon Grundy buried on a Sunday, Storm, Weather Witch, Human Torch, Johnny Storm, Constantine, Hellblazer, Green Goblin, Gobby, and the basic actions he used were Mystic Box and Distraction. So for us, we will use the same two basic actions. We will use Distraction, which basically means pay a mask and you can take something out of the attack zone, put it back in the field. And we all know about Mystic Box because, Patrick, it's your favorite basic action, and what do you know, it's the world champion.
Yeah, I know Dean actually is a TRP forums user. He goes by the name Alley Viper, and I'm curious, Dean, did you use Mystic Box before I brought it up, or was I just a little bit helpful? You know. Egos. I really like his team. Some of the stuff I was working with all the other TRP guys are very, very similar in line with this whole make it really hard for you to just attack me. You know, you can attack. I will stop you this way, or I'll stop you that way, or I'll stop you this way, and just do it over and over and over again. And, you know, the things I didn't pick up on, probably because I'm not like an AVX player, is the direct damage that Gobby can actually throw back at them. This really is like a big control team with a lot of direct damage. If this were a team in Magic the Gathering, it would be like blue red or blue black, because it's such a good like control burn mechanic. And I'm absolutely in love with this team.
Yeah, it's a very good team. Basically, the plan is get Human Torch on the board and then sidekicks and then Gobby. And if you have any trouble, then you can use Green Goliath, or you can use your Deadpool or Solomon Grundy. Now, some of these cards we're not able to use in an economy team for obvious reasons. The one exception we're making is Blue Eyes White Dragon, because that's really the entire strategy of the team is field Gobby and then kill Gobby and continuously bring Gobby out and do the direct damage. Now, we don't have access to Gobby because he's a super rare, but I agree with Shadowmeld in this aspect. You need to have Blue Eyes White Dragon on this team to make it work.
Yeah, and to replace the Gobby aspect, we decided to bring in Cheetah, Cursed Archaeologist.
Now, before we get into this, okay, let's talk about the cards that we're actually keeping on this team. So Mystic Box, obviously, Distraction, Blue Eyes White Dragon, and what are the other ones that we are keeping on this team?
We're keeping Green Goliath, just because he's a starter card. Well, he's an uncommon card from AVX, not a starter card. But his dice are starter dice, so he's not too difficult for people to get a hold of. We're also keeping Storm Weather Witch. She's a common. Her dice aren't that difficult to get. And she brings the utility of like disrupting action dice, specifically polymorph and anger issues, which are big strategies nowadays. Then we're keeping the Human Torch. Again, starter card, I think. And he's great for the team. You know, if you're fielding a 3-cost bolt character and some sidekicks, often he does, you know, lots of damage. Then we'll also keep the Deadpool. He's an interesting card. Do you know if that Deadpool was common or uncommon? I know he was cheap enough to keep on the team. And really, he's just targeted removal that still gives you a body, which is kind of what you need, since we're not going to be able to keep the rare Solomon Grundy.
We're using the Deadpool Jack, which is the uncommon from the AVX set.
And now we're going to move on to the cards that we can't keep. We can't keep the rare Solomon Grundy. Unfortunately, in our economy team, we couldn't afford to buy him the pants that he needs. Right, Evan? But we also can't keep the super rare Gobby or the super rare Constantine. And as good as those cards are for this team, in an economy budget, you really just, it's impossible. So what we've done is we've replaced them with ways to kind of mitigate that ability. And just to try to mimic the abilities that those cards used to have. To start with, we are bringing, Millennium Puzzle to replace Solomon Grundy. And to be honest, Solomon Grundy and Millennium Puzzle do almost exactly the same thing. Millennium Puzzle is a little better in how it removes things, in that it's whenever you want it to, and it sends it to the used pile. But Solomon Grundy gives you that body, and that body can help you either win or defend better, and then kill something. It's kind of trade-offs. Dean definitely made the right choice, but Millennium Puzzle is close enough that I don't feel you're like you're losing a lot for playing this economic version.
Solomon Grundy is a really good body just for being able to attack or block if you need it to. And because you're KOing with Blue Eyes White Dragon, it goes into your prep area and you can then roll it next turn. So, I mean, yeah, Solomon Grundy would be the better card in this case, but for an economy team, I think you're right. Millennium Puzzle is a great replacement.
And yeah, it's pretty good. Now, unfortunately, with Millennium Puzzle, you need to watch out because we brought Storm. And your opponent can use Storm to redirect. So if you're really worried about Storm and you want to trip up your opponent, you could instead swap Storm for the uncommon Morphing Jar. It's a 2-cost mask character, just like Storm. And he has an ability that disrupts your opponent's ramp, and allows you to, if you do KO a character, say with Millennium Puzzle, send them to the used pile. So it kind of simulates that same effect. You just don't get the really screwing with your action dice mechanic that Storm brings. So it's up to you whether you want to bring one or the other. But both are pretty viable. Now, as for replacing Gobby, which was Dean's win condition for the most part, we decided to bring Cheetah, the cursed archaeologist, the common Cheetah that we all know and love from DC Draft. She does considerably less damage than Gobby, and she does it when she attacks instead of when she's fielded. Two things to this. She does less damage, which is kind of bad, but she does it when she attacks instead of when she's fielded. So in a way, she can't be countered by Constantine. So if you are playing your economy team against somebody who isn't being economical, you can still circumvent their attack capabilities. So you can field Cheetah and do one damage, and then one damage from Human Torch, and then another damage from Human Torch. And so you're dealing 2 damage to the player and 1 damage to something on the board, maybe Hulk. And do a lot to your opponent every time you field it. And while that's maybe 3 less damage than Dean was doing with his Gobby, the fact that you can get that damage in around a Constantine mitigates a little bit of how much you have to worry about that Constantine.
One strategy we've seen lately with Cheetah is that you declare her as an attacker, and if they're going to just let the damage go through, you can pay the mask with distraction, pull her right back into the field, and just continuously hit for at least 1 damage every turn if you want to.
Or 2 damage if you, instead of distraction, just decide to sack her to Blue Eyes during the attack step. If you had a bolt instead of a mask, for example, you can KO her and then roll her again and then field her again with Human Torch. And since her fielding cost is so low, it's not that big of a sweat to get her back out there. And if you do miss her, she still turns into bolts, which it allows you to buy more Cheetahs. So, it's all good whichever way you do it. And then lastly, we had to find a replacement for Constantine. Let me tell you, that was hard work. And we are using Cheetah, which is less damage than Gobby would have been. So what I decided to do was to use Black Manta David. And why we decided to use David is because he's a defender with pretty good stats, but he's a 2-cost fist. His stats are great for a 2-cost, like ridiculously good. He's pretty much a 3-cost character stat-wise. But in 2-cost, he's got such a large defense value that it's hard for anybody to attack and you not block with Black Manta. So what you do is you put Black Manta out there, and he's now a defender that your opponent doesn't want to attack into, because if you block with Black Manta in just the right way, your opponent is going to take more damage. And so he makes up for some of that damage that you lose from Gabi by providing you with a defender that does direct damage. He doesn't control anywhere near as well as Constantine, but nothing really does. And there's not much we can do about it otherwise, because without actually using Constantine, there isn't a 2-cost card that has anywhere near the impact that Constantine will. I highly recommend the first upgrade you make to this deck would be to replace Black Manta with Constantine, if you're trying to get from economy to value team.
Now, if you're trying to spend money to make the world's team, you're looking at $120, because Constantine is going for about 70, Gobby's going for about 50, not to mention the rares of Blue Eyes White Dragon and Solomon Grundy. So, of course, the most economical option while still having the sort of soul to this team is to buy that rare Blue Eyes White Dragon. And I agree. I think if you want to start stepping up, look at getting that Constantine if you can. Maybe look at trying to make some trades to save some money. But nevertheless, here is an option that allows you to play a similar World Championship team without having to spend a lot of money. In fact, Blue Eyes White Dragon, I'm pretty sure you can find online for $15. You only need the one. You're generally not going to be fielding it very often, if at all. You just need that global ability. It's a good solution. I think you did well this week.
Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Well, that's pretty much all the time we have for today's episode. We're going to try and get more information for Age of Ultron for the next episode. In fact, I think actually later this week, Dysonon is going to be leaking everything with the help of world champion Dean Leyland. So next week, we're going to do our Goodbye Justice League, Hello Age of Ultron episode, where we will use some cards that maybe you may not expect to be absolutely fantastic. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Again, and you posted this before, you want suggestions from people regarding the final Justice League team that we do. I mean, not the final one, but the final Justice League constructed limited format.
Yeah, I want you to challenge me. Bring me a Justice League character that you don't think I can build a team around. I will tell you, I'm not going to pick Common Vixen, because I've already done something with Common Vixen. But any other Justice League character, bring it on.
I already yelled at you once for talking about that. You're not supposed to talk about that. All right, thanks for listening. You guys have a great rest of your day, your week, and we will see you 2 weeks from now for the next episode of The Prep Area. Bye for now.